The high portion of this episode is brought to you by Barry White.
Can't get enough of your bud, babe.
George. Hello, welcome to the seventh episode of High and Inside, the baseball podcast where I try to convince my husband to like baseball as much as I do, but he probably won't.
Yeah.
We are recording while... Oh, the Braves just broke up a perfect game against the Dodgers as we begun. I was hoping that that would change up the juju, and it did.
The Dodgers are currently up 5-0 in the top of the sixth. Somebody's Enciarte's at bat, which means who just got on base?
Tyler Flowers,
Gary,
I believe.
Gary Coleman.
I'm Gary Coleman from TV's Different Strokes.
What
would
was
you?
That? What was that? I've never heard that before.
That is a line from Avenue Q.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is he a character in that musical?
Yeah, he's the...
Gary Coleman character?
I made a lot of money that got stolen by my folks.
What is that
now
about?
Now I am the butt of almost everyone's jokes, but now I'm here. The superintendent, he's the super on Avenue Q. It's about this street in New York where a bunch of people live and Gary Coleman is their superintendent.
So exciting baseball things for the week.
I think one of the more exciting things in baseball is that CeCe Sabathia became the 17th pitcher to record more than 3,000 strikeouts. And he was only the third left-handed pitcher to accomplish that feat.
That's impressive. Who do you know who the other two are?
I don't.
Moving on.
I knew you were going to ask me, and I was like, I don't know. I got other fun facts about his 3,000th strikeout.
Yeah.
It was the third of the second inning of his first start at Chase Field, where the Arizona Diamondbacks play. It's the 33rd park that he has pitched in his career.
Weird.
Yeah, he's
so
been
he's
pitching
plus a new
for
one.
So long that he's pitched in multiple parks for different teams.
That's awesome.
Can you guess around when he debuted?
So
there's one delineating marker that I bet very few people in baseball can claim, if any.
9/11?
9/11.
I was like, it's
it was
not
pre 9/11.
Weird.
He debuted April of 2001, and I was like, oh, he's been pitching since before 9/11. I remember last year I mentioned that he was pitching against the Braves, and you were like, Jesus, CeCe Sabathia is still pitching?
A kid from my high school was part of a trade that CeCe Sabathia
That's
was
right.
involved in.
You've told me that before.
There was a, I believe his name was Zach Jackson. He pitched for, he was a pitcher. I think he ended up, I don't know, but it was like.
Did, I think Zach Jackson could only have been drafted by the Dover Pros.
he was like part of a trade for him. I think he like had a few games in the major. I don't know. I think he played for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
He was in my brother's grade. I think my brother was on baseball teams with him, and I watched him pitch when he was like 12 or 13, and he was like the one kid who could throw really, really fast.
And that's
so he would just mow people down.
Around, that was, I mean, I was 13 when 9/11 happened, so.
Yeah, so.
It was right around when CeCe started pitching in the league.
Well, good, congrats, CeCe.
Congrats, CeCe.
I was going to say, the only Congratulations. The only other CeCe I know is CeCe DeVille, who is the guitarist for Poison.
Oh, I know another CeCe. It's pizza.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
But that's CI.
CeCe's of like hospital juice.
Uh-huh.
I need, give me 12
right,
CeCe's.
Right, CeCe's. Yeah. Do you know what the CeCe's stand for?
Cubic. Cap. Capitalism.
Cubic centimeters.
It was cubic?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm half a doctor.
That's what that means.
Yep.
You get half a degree.
I could start the surgery, go up to halfway, and someone else takes it.
Hello, Eric Braband, M.
Oh,
the only other exciting baseball thing I had was bummer one, which is that Corey Kluber got hit with a comebacker who he's, I would say, the best pitcher in the Indians rotation. People would probably refute that with Trevor Bauer in mind, but he literally broke his forearm on a comebacker, so, and he's their second rotation member to have, I think, like a season-ending or at least like months-long injuries.
They don't know how it's indefinite, but not maybe.
He
maybe not.
Is saying he'll pitch again this season, but you know, lots of athletes say things like
that. What is that? What's the Indians' prospect like for the year? Were they going to be contenders?
Without, they absolutely would have been. I mean, they handily won their division last year, so I think everyone kind of considered it a lock. I think this is very, very good news for the Minnesota Twins. I think they're the sneaky fave in that division now.
That's the AL Central.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought this about pitchers about what's going to happen to pitching in the future. Because we're so concerned about, most sports are concerned about player safety, at least more so than they ever have been. Can you foresee a future in which pitchers during the game use those pitching screens?
Yeah.
Like,
I feel like we talked about this, you know, last year or a year ago, because some pitcher got, you know, smashed in the head.
Someone's going to get hit, like,
someone's
in the face.
Someone's gotten recently smashed in the head, and it was not good.
Yeah, and like, do you think there's a modified version of what they have that, like, it's just going to be worth it? The way you have to tackle in football has changed.
Right.
Is that something you could... Like, of course, purists will be against it. And, like, I totally understand it, too. On its face, it seems crazy because it's like, how can they field? Would they be able to field?
Yeah, but they didn't even used to have enough screens behind the backstop so that the people could see the game better. And people kept getting freaking hurt. it's absurd.
Don't base coaches have to wear helmets now?
I believe.
And that's a change. I remember there was an old Toronto Blue Jays player named John Olerud.
Sure.
Who was a first baseman. He always wore a helmet in the
field. I always preferred John Younger Nice.
Seven out of ten. But yeah, I feel like that has to happen. Like, I don't know if pitchers
get... I kind of think so, too.
How often it happens, but it just seems like there's going to be one that's bad enough.
They're throwing the balls faster.
Yeah.
So they're getting hit back at them faster and they're doing more damage.
They're easily in the most vulnerable position. They just like threw a rocket with their arm and then they're like half bent over. And in the process of moving, something's bad's going to happen. I would just love to see like what it looks like.
Yeah. I mean, CC Sabathia's got more cushion for the push. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why he's been around since pre 9/11. It's just like he gets balls hit him and he's like, okay. But these, you know, tall, skinny, lanky dudes who hurl fastballs are going to get crushed.
Yeah. I wonder, do you think
that's my scientific opinion, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you think that they would keep? Do you think you just put up the same practice pitching screen that they have, that weird, like, fat bottom L?
Oh,
I think... Or do you think that, like, there's a way to incorporate it so you would have to do something so if you hit a comebacker, the
fart.
Whatever the... That was just a Dodgers foul ball?
Yeah.
It looked like a home run, so you said fart.
I did.
Do you think there's a shape that, like... If you kept the current screen, the ball would just hit it and bounce back, and you wouldn't want that to happen. You would want the ball to be able to react...
How it would
move,
if a person were going
to
hit
to maintain
it, or
most
if it
of
were
going to
hit a person, excuse me.
So, like, I'm thinking
I
like
don't know,
a
man.
Weird, like, ramp or trench the pitcher can, like, hide under. You know,
trench
like
is interesting. I was kind of thinking,
not
like
they jump in, but a graduated, like, in the movies when you're running away from someone in the woods and you jump behind, like, a log.
Sure. I was picturing, like, you know, the front of a ship. Like, it's, like, a point. And it just, like, scoots past them as opposed to being a flat.
Yeah.
I definitely don't think it would be just, like, the traditional L. There's no way that they would start from that.
Yeah, because what they would do balls. If they were going to... But then the pitcher would have to run around and get them anyway.
Right. If they were going to do something like that, they would introduce it in the minors first to see, like, how it worked. They're already doing things with some rules like that right now.
Yeah. I would imagine they'd make it so the pitcher has to come down to it.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
So that the ball can still fly mostly unfettered.
Yeah. I don't think it would be nearly as large. I think it would just kind of be a little squat and spot.
Yeah.
Squat spot on the mound. What if the mound had a recessed area that the pitcher leaped into after every pitch?
Then you're just going to have tons of pitchers with like high ankle sprains.
Yeah. I was going to say, then you have to start weighing whether the jump was more injuries than the hits.
Hey, let's make it fun. You remember Guts?
Yeah, do I remember Guts?
What if we had them on like Guts style bungee cords, and as soon as they throw their pitch and their second foot hits the ground, someone pulls it and they just go flying up in the air.
Love it. Yeah, there could be a hoop up there.
Yeah, and if you dunk into that hoop,
and if they take
the
rosin bag,
Mike Malley, O'Malley's probably not doing anything. Lord knows Mo hasn't worked since.
Mo is back in the UK. She has a lovely family, and she's very passionate about her newfound music career.
I was going to say, if she guest starred on Great British Baking Show, they should just hire her and have make up a leaderboard.
Oh, my God. Fire the Mighty Boosh dude. Hire Mo. We fixed Great British Baking Show.
So that kind of rolls nicely into what I wanted to ask about, because I think I'm a confused, like, things are starting to stick out to me about baseball that I'm going like, why is that like that?
Mm-hmm.
Specifically pitcher wins, that
right.
stat, and how we accumulate it and why we even use it.
I think that this has actually been an argument for a while, especially in the era of shortened starts and longer reliefs.
Mm-hmm.
It's more common that the leader of the game would change more often while the starting pitcher isn't still in the game.
And in some games I've seen, the starting pitcher comes in, gives up 0 runs or 1 run. His team never scores, and they do all their scoring in the later of the game, the like 7th, 8th, and 9th, when he's already pulled, and some guy who just came in and pitched one inning and may have given up a run or two could get the win. And it just doesn't seem, it seems like kind of a pointless stat. It seems so like every win is so dependent on so many other factors that every pitcher is going to have some of them that are just by coincidence. It's just like they just happen to be the pitcher of record, because a win is when you're the pitcher who pitched last before your team got a lead.
You are, right? You were the team's pitcher when they took the lead.
When they took the lead, right.
Because most of the time what happens is when you would come back from that inning, they may not necessarily still be the pitcher.
Right, right,
but
right.
That is when that change
gotcha.
Takes place.
Gotcha. So there are so many things that can happen in the game where you'd pitch the bulk of the game and they pick up the lead after you're gone, you've been
sure.
pulled, or so a relief pitcher blows it, and then your offense comes back in the next half inning, and then that relief pitcher who blew it gets the win.
Right,
and it doesn't seem very predictive or indicative of anything in any one thing in particular.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason why stats like, I don't know how long WHIP, walks and hits per inning pitched, has been around, but I perceive it as being more prevalent in latter years, you know, post sabermetrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a big part of that is because the win-loss record does not much to actually reflect the pitcher's effectiveness. If anything, it shows you what the team does when that pitcher
right.
is
it's
in.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So to me, it feels like I kind of want to even like ignore it now
right.
and not even use it as a barometer for how good of a pitcher is.
Right.
Or I want to find a stat that a way to attribute wins that's better than they happen to be pitching when your team took in the lead. And I thought about doing some like math and some homework and coming and maybe even trying to devise a stat, but I'm sure many people have when I don't think I even Googled anything. I looked at one box score and went like, there's no way to do this.
I even gave you suggestions. Yeah. To try to, but it I seemed, mean, I did
obviously
to it.
People, there's like better win stats out there, but it's always like,
we should really kick up the research team for this project.
Yeah. They've been slacking. It feels like if someone's going to devise a new stat, they're going to do it in the sabermetrics-y type way, where it's this big, long, like linear equation, and you're going to weight all these specific factors. And I'm sure that that's the better way to do it, and I'm all for that. But I was like, what's a simple, like just a simple number that already exists that we could use? And I kind of can't think of a reason, an argument why the pitcher who pitches the most innings shouldn't get the win if you win the game. I can't think why what's the argument for not using just who pitched the most innings in your win?
Nay, cleared the most time.
Yeah,
and charged the team towards victory.
Got the most outs, probably. If they pitch the most innings, they're going to be the single pitcher with the most outs, which is going to attribute to your win. I guess it's because then you wouldn't want the pitcher who pitched the most innings to get the loss, but maybe the loss can be a different thing. I just feel like if you pitch the whole game, it's your game, or most of the game, it's your game. Shouldn't we want to know how often the team wins when this pitch, because it's mostly a starting pitcher stat, right?
Sure.
I mean, anyone can get a win, but usually we're looking at it with starting pitchers. So wouldn't you just want to know how often the team tends to win a game where that starting pitcher started and pitched the most amount of innings out of anyone on the staff?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. Like,
I'm sure there's something I'm not thinking of, but
I guess where I to try to think of the things that would probably be the devil's advocate to this would be like if I looked at a relief pitcher's stats and they had a lot of wins, there is something to be said for the relief coming in and locking down the end of the game while your team is then able to like carve up the other team's bullpen.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, it's just how often does it happen where somebody gets a win, even though they didn't necessarily prevent more runs, the offense just outpaced whatever they gave up.
Right.
So like a win to me doesn't necessarily say that a reliever didn't held people. I think there is a hold stat, and I don't know
there
exactly
is.
What hold. I would assume it's something like in a relief appearance,
they maintain a lead.
Yeah, they maintain the lead. Yeah. So maybe just that win stat doesn't get attributed to relievers. Like if it's kind of not applicable, it just seems like a weird stat. So
Yeah, I think that holds. I mean, that was what I suggested. You kind of compare the wins of relief too is like whether they blew a hold or not.
Yeah.
Because I think those are the most, we can agree those are the most egregiously attributed wins.
Right. So if you're saying like, if you look at their wins, but you also look at their holds and they're out of whack, that would tell you what you want to know. But then to me, it's just like, why do we still need that first number?
I've never argued for it in the whole conversation.
I'm tasking you with coming up with a perfect counter to this argument you couldn't have prepared for.
Well, I also agreed with you the whole time, so. Right.
That's improv, though. Makes for good improv. Maybe good podcasting. So why don't we get into our home teams a little bit. The Braves are playing right now and kind of getting shellacked.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, this game also started with another starting pitcher who is pitching very well getting hit by a comebacker. So we've kind of laid the groundwork for where this game headed. I feel pretty bummed out about this because it was Max Fried, who's been probably the best member of the Braves starting rotation thus far, pitching in his hometown for the first time and at Dodger Stadium for the first time. So I think there were some nerves going on in the first inning of this game. He gave up a couple runs. I was really confident that he was going to come back and lock it in because that's kind of been his MO so far. It's just like he might have one rocky inning, but otherwise his starts have been really solid. And he promptly got hit by a pitch in his pitching hand.
That's no good.
He threw one pitch and then left the game after that.
That's not great. How's the record been otherwise?
They just swept the Marlins, which is good because I don't know if I've mentioned this specifically, but I think it was really apt when I heard it, which is that a Braves radio announcer said towards the beginning of the season that the NL East very well may come down to how badly one of the other four teams beats the Marlins. Because there are currently still only a handful of games separating the first and fourth teams. So anytime we can sweep the worst team in our division is very good. Other than that, they've been pretty scuffly. Mm-hmm. The offense is kind of stalled out. Josh Donaldson was on a great tear for a while and then promptly tweaked a calf and has been trashed since then. Like, it's just kind of the way baseball goes, I think, is one thing goes and then another thing goes. We kind of talked about that with injuries, and it's feeling a little bit like that right now, especially after we kind of tried to make a comeback in the first game against the Dodgers, and this one has been just tough to watch. We lost our starter in the second, and they took a perfect game through the fifth.
It seems like every once in a while in baseball, there's like a game that, like, once it hits even like the third inning, you're like, well, this is one of the ones we lose. And because you know losing is inevitable, you just, the game never even gets close or comes back.
Yeah, and I think that it's hard to predict things, but it's also, I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, we've kind of fixed some of our bullpen woes. So, of course, when we do that, the other things are going to end up popping up.
That's what's kind of been interesting about the Buccos lately. They had a 8-game losing skid, which was tough to watch. And they've came out of it. They're back over 500. I think they've won 3 in a row now.
Nice.
But one of the things I observed, so, I mean, it's not exclusive to baseball, but I often think that, like, when things are going great, you're getting all the breaks. And when things are going badly, you're not getting any breaks. And that means a requirement of things going well is to get the breaks. So you look at a run to compare it to football, like I have to. You look at the run of the Patriots and their dynasty since 9/11. literally 2001 when they won their first Super Bowl. Everything has gone right for them. Brady's been healthy. The rest of their division's been god-awful. Like they've been great, but they've also kind of gotten all the breaks. I mean, their dynasty started with a play that was so controversial, they made a different rule. Like so many things have to go right. And similarly in the Pirates skid, so many things had to go wrong. One of their most important players was out for most of the skid. And now they get him back, and now they're winning games not because anything dramatically changed, just they're getting the little breaks. You know, they don't get thrown out when they're stealing, or conversely, they just throw out a guy, or the other team boots a play, and that leads to a big inning. It's been really interesting to watch how razor thin that margin is in baseball, and how the difference between the teams can look great, but it really isn't.
Yeah, they literally just showed a stat that was like a catch that one of the Dodgers outfielders just made. He had a 5% chance of making, and that's what this series has felt like.
And it's like, it's kind of chicken or eggy. It's like, are you getting shellacked because they're doing all these low percentage things and they're just, the dice roll's always coming up for them?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the only way that you can get shellacked?
Yeah.
Is when they have to, all the dice rolls come up.
That's a really good point.
And sometimes I just feel like the Braves aren't doing anything wrong. It's just all the things that are left up to chance are just turning the wrong way.
Yeah.
And that's why the score is 5-0.
It's also, I mean, how much did you like watch or listen to or follow Pirates games while we were traveling? Because we basically have traveled for most of the bulk of the time in between we recorded.
That is something I didn't want to talk about. I didn't follow them actively. We were at a wedding, so it's like,
yeah, one of the 5 days we were out of town.
True, but we were like doing stuff with people, so I wasn't going to have my phone or my face in my phone. Yeah. But I did notice that when they did win some games, I would pull up my phone and I would like, when I find the score, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I was excited about it.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good signifier for where my fandom's at. And like, it was fun to take a break from it a little bit, because now that I've got to watch a game today, which was a particularly fun game that they won, it felt like fun again. It didn't feel like a slog. It seems like part of the way to maintain your fandom is to take a few breaks.
Yeah.
Like, just go like, maybe I'll need to tune out a little bit, because I think their next two series are against, they have a 4-game set against the Cardinals, who are in first place in the Central, and a 4-5-game set against the Diamondbacks, who already swept them once this year and is like, has the same record as the Cardinals, but they're in second place in their division because some other team in their division is above them. Is it the Dodgers? That would make sense. Regionality is usually how they group people.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, maybe the Braves will turn it around this game.
I would love to not get swept again. It's already looking like they're going to lose another series. It's just, we can't go back and forth between like sweeping the Marlins and getting swept by everybody else. So you're not going to win anything.
Yeah. You're just playing 500 ball. Sweeps only help if you do. It's like bowling, right? Yeah. Strike's great, but you got to,
the next shots,
however bowling works. Okay. So Eric and Mary Beth, they just went to sleep because they've been traveling. They're real tired. They had us come in, and we're going to do the next segment. My name's Tony. I live in Mount Lebo, Pittsburgh, born and bred. I'm a total yinzer.
Hey, I'm Lauren. Lauren Faulkner. Grew up, born and raised in Sandy Springs.
Where's Sandy Springs at? Is that like...
Oh, it's right outside. Like, it's basically part of Atlanta.
Oh, no, so it's not like by Youngstown. I thought it was by Youngstown, Ohio.
No, Sandy Springs is in Atlanta. Oh my God. I mean,
I don't know what I ain't never leaving the Keystone State unless we're going to Cedar Park, Cedar Point, because that's in Toledo. Then I'll go. Or Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, even though Cleveland sucks.
I mean, I go to Myrtle Beach every summer. So
where's that? That down like 76?
Myrtle Beach?
Yeah.
It's in South Carolina.
Oh, I don't know.
You got to drive through like the whole, you got to drive through part of Georgia, part of South Carolina.
All right, so we got to talk about the one thing we think our team needs to put us over the top to help us win a World Series this year. You want to start or you want me to start?
I think I'll start. I think I'm ready to get at it.
Go for it.
Okay, so you know how the Braves...
Yin's got some energy.
I mean, I've got to. You'll see. Okay, I've got to. Okay, you know how the Braves, like, they just don't... It seems like they just, like, don't have enough... Like, it's like there's not enough people in the bullpen. Like, there's not, you know, some of the guys who start were hurt at the beginning of the season. Like, we have a lot of hurt pitchers. Okay, so I'm so glad y'all came today, because I want to talk to you about your direct sales opportunities. And I want y'all to reach out to everyone who's in your network and ask them if they know any relief pitchers who would like to pitch for the Braves. And then those 10 people will ask 10 more people if they know any relief pitchers who will pitch for the Braves. And
you,
I just
sound
think,
like this lady I bought a timeshare on Lake Erie from.
Oh my God. I have a timeshare too. It's in Myrtle Beach. Oh my God. Okay. But, like, yeah, this is kind of like that, because it's like if everyone shares the time of talking to their whole network to bring in more pitchers, then we'll be able to do more work. You know, we'll all probably make like $100,000.
So do I have to like give you money now?
Yeah. Oh, to be a part of the, we're going to call it the Braves Radio Network. I know it's taken, but I just couldn't think of a better name. It was short notice. Okay. So to be a part of the Braves Radio Network, you have to pay in a small fee. But then once you get other people to pay the fee, it's like you never paid the fee.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And then
I'll just
think,
give you my money.
And then at the top, you know, we'll be able to use that money to pay the pitcher that we find.
I think my mom has some like Heinz ketchup stock.
Oh.
So we could probably cash that in.
Yeah, sell one. And that's, you know, that stock is there to be seed money for your next venture.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sold.
All right. I think that'll really help the team. I think that'll help build us a strong foundation. It'll make everybody, you know, to really unite the fan base, give everyone a strong sense of community in this Braves Radio Network. And just also one more thing. This is not a pyramid scheme.
Okay, so I want to talk about the Buccos. And I think if the Buccos are going to succeed, they got to look to the Steelers and got to look to the Penguins. And those are two teams that have been super successful in the city of Pittsburgh. The Buccos haven't won a championship since, like, the 70s when Donnie Irish was still rocking. Yeah, I think he's still rocking now. I don't know if Donnie Irish is dead. I should know. I feel like I saw him on a Clark show. Okay, so when the Steelers and the Penguins win, they always have superstars, you know?
Yeah.
Penguins right now, they got Sidney Crosby. They got Geno. Steelers got Big Ben, you know? We used to have we had Terry Bradshaw back in the 70s. We had the bus. The bus was the best.
You had Antonio Brown, though. And, you know, I just did not agree with how that man, how he celebrated.
Yeah,
he was just like a little much for me.
I bought a jersey the day after he got traded because I lost my phone. So I didn't know. I paid like $200 for it, too.
What are you going to do with it now?
Oh, I'm just going to like scratch out the name and only wear it at home.
Smart.
But the Buccos need a superstar. The last superstar we had was like Roberto Clemente, right?
Yeah, and he died.
He passed away. R.I.P. Rest in pierogies.
We say rest in peaches.
I just think we need to find that guy. Maybe you know, Sid can take some at bats. Maybe Big Ben could come in. And like,
oh, you think that like hockey players and football players are just going to come onto your baseball team?
Yeah, I don't think. Is there a rule?
I'm just saying maybe you should start a phone tree of some sort, or maybe like a Pittsburgh radio network. Because I think you're only thinking about those guys because, you know, you see them, you've seen them succeed. But, like, those skills don't necessarily translate in the same way that my person skills do translate to bringing in people into the Braves Radio
but
Network.
But DeBerg is all about superstars. We have Mario.
Sure.
We had Big Ben.
I know Mario.
You know Mario?
Yeah, Mario and Luigi.
No. But the Buccos don't got no superstars right now. They got Josh Bell. I like Josh Bell. I don't think he's a superstar.
Yeah.
I like Polanco.
What about that Starlin Marte?
He ain't hitting too good.
You know what? And also, I don't know if you can remain the team's like face and superstar after you have a PED scandal.
Yeah. I saw him down at GNC recently.
Oh, yeah?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I just figured he was like getting... I don't think you can get illegal stuff at GNC, can you?
Then what was he doing there?
Probably like protein powder.
Oh.
Honestly... You probably saw a guy that looked like him because there's no way Starlin Marte is going and walking to GNC and getting his own protein powder. He's getting somebody to buy that for him.
Maybe. Maybe I'm not that good with faces. But anyway, I think we got to get a superstar. If we got to trade for him, I don't know how you get superstars in baseball. It seems like random.
Trades, a lot of money when they're free agents. Yeah, maybe it is a better idea to just see if one of those other guys wants to come over and start playing.
The Buccos ain't going to spend money on nobody in free agency, so...
Yeah.
I think get Sid in there.
Yeah.
He hit a home run when they took batting practice that one time between the games. They did it one year.
Okay.
I think he just let...
I believe you. I've seen Space Jam.
What's that got to do with it?
People from other sports can play baseball.
Oh, yeah. That actually perfectly makes sense.
Yeah, you just question him in a smart, young entrepreneur.
Okay. I'm going to go get... some chili cheese fries.
Is that I've eaten those.
That's not really like
not
a Burke
thing.
That's just
okay.
Like I like chili cheese fries.
Oh, I get that. I feel the same way about chili cheese fries. Eric Braben, what's the inside scoop?
It's kind of music. It's not kind of music. It is music. So it's funny that you said it. It's gonna be kind of lame because it just came out. And a lot of people are talking about it, but I just really like the new Vampire Weekend album.
Yeah, it's good. I've seen people talking about it too.
I listened to it basically all day today.
I had the one single that had already come out stuck in my head all day.
I think that this isn't like a hot take on it because it seems to be very well documented that it's influenced by his marriage. I think he's married to Rashida Jones, or they have a kid. or
they're deaf together, and I forgot that
there's some matrimonial themes. I mean, Eric is called Father of the Bride, but having gotten married in this past year and been to a lot of weddings recently, it sounds like a wedding.
Yeah, I can actually see that.
It's very interesting. I can't help but listen to some songs and be like, oh, I would have played this at our wedding if this song was out by then.
Yeah.
And like they're talking about, they're literally talking about marriage and people joining and relationships together. And all that stuff's great. But I just think the music is so fun to listen to. And they're just so, there's something about all their melodies, specifically their vocal melodies, that just get like stuck in my head. And I've always thought they were like so good in that aspect. And they play, I love music with guitars in it, and a lot of popular music and indie music has moved away from guitars and into keyboard sounds and synthesizer sounds, and they just like play clean sounding guitars really intricately and really well, and that's always going to get me excited. And it's not like this is a band I like all their albums. I understand that they're not for everyone. They rub some people the wrong way, and I totally get that. But I don't know, it's just a very like fun, sunny album that feels light on its surface, but then when you kind of like look at what they're doing and how they're arranging songs and some of the lines that they're playing, it's like it can be as deep as you want it to be. They're just so fun. They're just such a like a fun house mirror of a band in that way. I just really like them.
More like vampire all day, every day.
Yeah, it was vampire the 8 hours that I worked today.
That was the best I came up with after your whole spiel.
I mean, yeah, maybe there's not just a good joke for that.
I also was just going to go, and that's the SI scoop!